welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live each week, Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at wpvmfm.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And I want to welcome our listeners once again back to WPVM and A Mindful Emergence. And at this point, say hello to my co-host, Margaret Kirshner.
Hi, everyone.
So welcome back for program number 92. We're broadcasting live October 9th, 2017. And I'm really, really happy to welcome into the studio our special guest this week, Linda Reese.
Thank you, Eddie, and thank you, Margaret. It's an honor and a privilege to be here tonight.
Okay, so I'm not sure what's happening with the microphone, but it's not picking up. So I think we need to share a microphone. These are the joys. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Eddie, and thank you, Margaret. It's an honor and a privilege to be here tonight.
Okay, so let's do this, and this is the joy of community radio, where sometimes things like this happen, and we'll just do fine with one microphone. So the theme this week is the three A's of recovery from eating disorder: awareness, acceptance, and action. And so I was wondering if you could give us an idea of what we're going to be talking about and focusing on for the next hour, Linda.
Sure. Well, you know, the three A's are just another awareness tool to kind of like organize, you know, the process of addiction and the stages of addiction. So the awareness is really the first step as a result of really experiencing and exploring the disease of overeating and compulsion. So before we get to an awareness, we have to really do the act of overeating. And then once we get to the unmanageability of our lives, you know, with the 12-step program, you know, I advocated working a 12-step program. So step one is admitting the powerlessness of the substance. In this case, it's the food. And then leading it to the unmanageability. So before we get to the first A, that has to be explored. And for some, unfortunately, it takes a long time before they really get to that awareness of unmanageability.
So we'll really be exploring how this program works, a lot of the work that you do in the community. And I'm glad we have a full hour, because this is obviously a major issue in our culture.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your background a little bit. I know we got a little bit of a hint of what part of the country you grew up in.
Yes, I come from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm proud of my accent.
Absolutely. As well you should be.
Yes. And I've traveled to many different parts of the country. I've lived in a few places. Right now, I live here in the Asheville area for about 6 months out of the year. And in 1979, I moved to South Florida. So although I've moved to different geographical places, the accent has followed me, and I'm proud of it.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
So you got sort of the best of both worlds.
Yes.
You spend your summers up here, your Florida's down winter. Yeah, your winter's down in Florida, and that's working out well for
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, yes.
So great. Okay, so when you were growing up in Brooklyn, what was your life like? What was your family environment like there?
Well, my family of origin, I had two siblings, and my parents all demonstrated some form of addiction. So I was really, I'm doing the cliche dysfunctional. I grew up in a dysfunctional family experience, and the addictions were practiced on a daily basis, and especially food. My mother was a food addict, and my sister was a food addict, and a bulimic as well. So I really I saw this growing up, and food was a source of comfort and represented a lot of love. So as a child, I ate a lot. You know, I was very obese.
Hmm.
And in my family of origin, there was a lot of mental illness as well. So the food, for me, served as an escape.
Coping strategy.
Yes, a coping strategy, yes.
Yeah. Would you say across the board that that's the reason that most people tend to go to overeating?
I think it's very, you know, varied according to the person. My belief is that, and based on research, that this is an inherited disease.
Oh, yeah?
So, like, for example, my grandmother and my great-grandmother were morbidly obese. And the genetics, I firmly believe, and read a lot about it, and research has proved that it is inherited. All addiction is inherited. Of course, the environment plays a big factor in it as well. So, you know, if it's demonstrated in the family, it's by a child, it's copied.
Yeah, and you talked about the fact that your family situation was, I think you used the word dysfunctional, there was mental illness. So that obviously created a lot of stress.
Yes.
One definition that Margaret and I have run across for addiction, and I think this is probably across the board, regardless of whatever the substance or whatever the behavior is ritualized compulsive comfort seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that that was how you found comfort?
Absolutely. You know, but especially sugar for me. Sugar was my drug of choice, and mm-hmm. it really put me on it was a high. It was really a 9-second high. And then after that, the crash right after of depression.
Yeah.
And so then I would eat more to take away the edge.
Well, and there's actually, you know, when we look at the biology and physiology, they've come to understand how that's hitting receptors and there's certain things going on in the body and the brain. So.
Yes, the hypothalamus in food addiction is quite different from a normal brain.
Oh, yeah.
So food addicts, you know, have a dysfunctional hypothalamus, and because of that, when they eat, they can't satisfy it. It can't get satiated.
Yeah.
And
wow.
It's a bottomless disease.
Is that part of the limbic system, the hypothalamus?
Yes.
The fight or flight. So,
yes. Yeah.
So I don't like what's happening, so I'm just going to keep eating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So going back to your family, at what point did you have any sense that this was a problem?
Well, as a very young child, I had a lot of trauma. There was some, you know, abuse, especially verbal abuse, critical parenting. So I became very shamed about it. You know, this is a shame-based disease and guilt and shame. So it was just a vicious cycle. And I just ate a lot to hide. And it was at very young, like 5-6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I had a traumatic incident when I was 5 years old. And from that moment on, that was my original trauma. And in the development of any type of addiction, when we go back, there's usually an initial trauma of some sort that sets the ball rolling.
That's certainly been our experience.
And you learned how to keep this a secret? You learned how to hide your food and your eating?
Yes. Because it is definitely a dishonest disease. You know, again, it's based on shame and guilt and not telling the truth about who you are.
And was it even more shame-based? Because as I think my perception is, and I may be wrong, but that women take on shame more than men around their appearance if they become overweight. Would you say that's true?
I'm not really sure about that because in my experience now, I started to really work with some males and they basically have the same thing. However, it's more of an ego. It was harder for a man's ego to really get reduced. A woman, it takes a little bit less time. But a male, it does take a little bit longer to crush the ego.
Yeah, and maybe to get past some of the stubbornness, too. Huh?
Whatever it is, yes.
So at what age did you really realize that you needed to do something?
I didn't really hit my bottom, you know, until I was in my 20s.
Oh, really?
So I was very obese. I had, it's a painful disease to have an eating disorder because socially it's very empty, you know, a lot of rejection, a lot of feelings of less than, a lot of overcompensation to try to overcompensate in other areas.
So like, explain that, like how that might happen.
For example, like the life of the party, I was very jovial. It's the two sides of the personality.
So you were going for the jolly, fat sort of image, stereotype, huh?
Yes, the very happy person that didn't show any pain on the outside and just stuffing down all the feelings.
Wow.
So I didn't really hit a bottom until I was a young woman in my 20s.
I mean, right now, we're very weight proportional. You're slender so this is quite a contrast.
Yes.
You said before the show, off air, you lost 100 pounds.
Yes. In 1972, I shed 100 pounds. I don't like to say lost because when we lose it, we find it again.
Yeah.
So I've shed 100 pounds and I've been on maintenance for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, what I was kind of getting at before was the idea that I think in our culture, women, especially young women, have this idea that they're not going to be accepted, they're not going to be loved, unless they fit the image of the women on the magazine covers in the supermarket. If I don't look like Jennifer Aniston, then I'll never get the man of my dreams.
I agree with that. You know, the media really portrays a very thin image. If you notice, again, not only the thinness, but the airbrushing, It demonstrates and shows perfection.
Yeah.
So people, the young generation, do you know that girls in kindergarten are starting to even have body shame and they go on diets in kindergarten? So
That starts
at a very young age where people are obsessed with their appearance. And it does come from commercials, comes from magazines, the media, the newspaper, and of course television. You see these perfect women. However, I must say of recent, like the last decade, they are bringing in more obese women. For example, in advertisements, in the circulars, they are showing women, large size women. And they have magazines that are also, you know, demonstrating larger women. Mm-hmm. So I think it is shifting.
Yeah. There's a yoga teacher in this community who, on her website, is the term plus size an appropriate term to use for
yes.
a woman that's bigger? She's got a plus size woman. And I thought, this is great. You know, because the image around yoga, and Margaret's a yoga teacher, you know, again, just reinforces this idea that you're supposed to have a certain appearance to be healthy. But that's not true, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, there's a saying in program, you're not a body, you're a somebody.
Yeah. So how big of a problem is this overeating?
Running rampant in the world. You know, I've traveled through the world a little bit, and it's all over the world. And culturally, some cultures do not view being overweight as a bad thing. It's a negative thing.
True.
So in our society, though, it is viewed as not being mm-hmm. Less than.
And what have you noticed about different cultures? For example, I know I was around an Italian. I'm not Italian myself ethnically, but I was in an Italian community, and there was so much emphasis on eating.
Yes.
And in fact, you couldn't get in and out of an Italian's house without eating. And in fact, I was just visiting a friend of mine up in New York State who is Jewish, and she kind of joked with me because she wanted to feed me breakfast, and I'm not a breakfast eater, and she said, you realize that as a Jew, you know, this is really hard for me to let you leave the house this morning without feeding you. So, you know, what about the cultural influences as well?
Well, I think in any culture, their food is really the big focus. Any culture. I mean, we can name any one of them. It also depends on whether or not you have this. Like, if you do not have the predisposition to having an eating disorder or any addiction, you can grow up where food is a constant, it's focused on, and you can still not become that. So you can manage your food. I mean, I've worked with many different peoples in different cultures, and some of them just don't have this. They might have gotten other things, but they don't have the food. So it doesn't matter. Like, for example, I'm talking more about the body. So, for example, like men would love a body in a different culture versus American culture. Men want very, most men, I'm not generalizing, but in my experience, because of what we talked about with the media, the view of what a man would want or a woman would want, or, you know, it could be same-sex relationships as well. It's a different attraction based on the culture.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, some cultures like big women.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just conditioned at an early age to prefer a certain, you know, image.
Yeah, and I've traveled a lot, and I think it's really, really strong here. I know when I lived in Europe over there, they didn't seem, in some of the countries I was in, they didn't seem to put as strong an emphasis on it. But on the other hand, too, I didn't see the levels of obesity that I see in this country. I don't know how it compares in terms of statistics, but from a just my own personal experience, it seems like we have just about the highest rate of obesity anywhere.
Well, there's no charge. Like in some of the European countries, they can eat and they can have certain substances with neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
There's no charge on that. It's not an addictive culture.
Right.
So with them, there's no shame or guilt. In America, it's a shame-based society. And also, you know, the people here, you have to realize our foods here. In some cultures, like for example, can I name a culture, say Japan?
Sure.
Like the Asian culture. Most of them, I visited there in 2005, and there was no obesity in the country because of their nutrition and their food style of cuisine. However, once we started bringing over some of the fast food chains, when I was there, I saw maybe two or three obese children, because we visited all the educational systems, so it was starting to filter in. I'm sure it's there now.
That processed food will get you.
That's right. So here in America, we have a very difficult, the food that's approached here, there's a lot of additives, there's a tremendous amount of sugar and sodium. It's what we feed our children in the school program.
Oh, I was just going to mention the school lunch program. Yeah, it's terrible here. And in other countries, it is so much better.
Yes. For example, a lunch in Japan would be they take ownership of their school. They go down and they bring up their rice, fish, vegetables, and fruit. Everything's healthy. Here in America, the food is based on, you know, we have all our, you know, very bad additives, all the hormones that are in our foods. So it's a very big problem here for our youth.
Yeah, yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on the new WPVMLP in Asheville, North Carolina. We're 103.7 on the radio dial, and if you want to stream us globally, just go to WPVMFM.org. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Linda Reese. The topic is the three A's of recovery from eating disorder. And you're involved in assisting people from eating disorder and addictions. You do counseling and you facilitate groups both in South Florida and up here in North Carolina. And you've been doing this for 40 years. You hold two master's degrees because apparently one wasn't enough. One in education, because you were a teacher for a long time. In elementary education, primarily. And then your other master's is in information studies. What is information studies?
I was a media specialist in a middle school, and the degree is basically library science, a lot of research-based.
Okay.
Yes.
You're certified in administration and supervision, and you're nationally board-certified and hold a master's addictions counselor certification, which you've had since 1992.
Correct.
You're also an author, and we'll talk later about that, of a children's book, Creating Awareness for Young Age Children. So we'll definitely want to explore that. What I want to get back to right now is, as you well know, you've heard the term, Margaret and I hear this term often, it was particularly within 12 steps, but in recovery, called a moment of clarity. And you mentioned step one, where we realize we're powerless over our addiction. What was your moment of clarity? You said it happened in your 20s?
Yes. I just want to backtrack a little bit, because what happens in the process of addiction is, again, with the awareness, I could not get that awareness until I hit that bottom of unmanageability. So for me, it was a vicious cycle for many, many years. And what happened was, I share about traumatic events, something happened where I really hit an emotional bottom. Mm-hmm. And believing, you know, this is basically a soul sickness. It's a soul sickness. It's based on inner work. So I never realized that before as a kid growing up. You know, who ever thought that this was inside work? Hmm. I always felt like the outside would fix me.
Well, that's the culture we're in.
Yes. So leading up to my bottom, I had a traumatic event in my life. I had lost a child.
Oh, boy.
And when I lost this child, I gained like a tremendous amount of weight physically. So then what happened was a series of events occurred, which I believe were beyond me. I felt it was like a higher powered source, which is part of the spiritual enlightenment in the 12 steps. And I was led to this person who brought me into recovery. So that's what happened for me. It really had nothing to do with me. I was just in the right place at the right time, and this person appeared who had been working this program, and I started the program.
You were in the right place at the right time, and you were also willing. Let's not forget that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You were willing. You had said, okay, I'm ready to do something. Going back to that action, you took action. So you went to a 12-step program specifically designed for overeating.
Yes.
And we're both involved in 12-step recovery. And as we know, there are hundreds of different programs. So that's been a cornerstone of your recovery.
Yes. And the second A is acceptance. So when that happened to me, mm-hmm. that was this, first I was aware that I had it. I hit the bottom. Then I accepted it, because the fight, you talked about fight or flight. That was the whole pattern
sure.
of my early years until I became a young woman. And then after that step one experiential, which took years, I finally accepted it. And then now I could do the third A, which is the action, which is working and navigating through the rest of the step work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you act as a sponsor in the program and work with people at that level as well as the other work you do?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously that's such a critical part of the program.
Yes.
That you share that and support people in that way.
That's step 12.
Step 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carry the message.
Yes.
Absolutely. And you're certainly carrying the message today. Well, we have already gotten almost to the halfway point, and we're going to stop and take a musical break. And this week I picked out an instrumental the theme of it doesn't have any relationship to the particular theme of the show. It's just a really nice piece of music by Miles Davis, from a recording that he did in the late 50s that's become a classic called A Birth of the Cool. And we're going to just take about 3 minutes or so and enjoy a track called Venus de Milo. Music from Bertha the Cool, classic recording by Miles Davis. This is Eddie LeSure, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPVM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or WPVMFM.org, Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m., as well as Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. for the rebroadcast, past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. So you can easily locate these programs just by going to our website, selecting the schedule. You'll see it listed at the top, and then just click on this program, which is listed Mondays at 7, and you'll see a variety of shows that you can scroll through and listen to at your convenience. All our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. You can access more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. And I want to mention, if you have any questions or comments that you want to send us or reach our guests, you can contact us at discover@amindfulemergence.com. So returning now to our guest, Linda Reese, and the topic, the three A's of recovery from eating disorder. So, you know, the interesting thing about eating disorders is that's distinctive from many other forms of recovery is, as a person myself who's in recovery from substances, specific substances, I know that there's places I can't go, or at least when I was in early recovery, I should avoid. Just basically stay away from the drugs and in alcohol, which is a drug. But in terms of eating disorder, that's not so. That's not an option. So I was wondering if you could talk about that distinction and how that's worked with and sort of expound on that, Linda.
Thanks, Eddie. Yes, the food addiction is really one of the most challenging addictions because, as you shared, with alcohol, you put the cork in the bottle, you put the bottle away. With drugs, you put away all your drugs and you don't have to address them. But with food, we have to eat every day in order to live and to be healthy. So the process of food addiction, you know, I heard this quote the other day. Food addiction is like being kicked by a rabbit. It takes a long, long time to really get aware, as we're talking about today, that you have it, hitting bottoms, and then being in recovery. So the food is very difficult. However, in each phase of recovery, when you are working a program and you do have support, there are different ways to, you know, approach it. So yes, we do stay out of slippery places at the beginning. For example, if I have a sugar addiction, I wouldn't go into a bakery because that would trigger my even like a memory, a smell.
Oh yeah, the smell.
The behaviors, and it could trigger me to go back and think about it. Sometimes even in the house, if something's in the refrigerator, I look at it and I may want to eat it. Like maybe not on a Monday, but maybe on a Wednesday, that thought will go right in my mind. Because, you know, first it's a daydream, and then if we allow it to stay there, then we will act on it. So it's very different. Food is very difficult. So that's why most people in recovery for food addiction need to develop a structured food plan that would be livable for them, for their age, their body type, according to their doctors, possibly going to a nutritionist. Once the food plan is established, the person has a fighting chance to work the rest of the program.
Yeah. So this is a lifestyle change.
Absolutely.
It's not just a diet. It's not saying, well, I'm just going to stay away from French fries.
It's just like a drug. So, for example, when I work with patients, we do what's called the red light. We do the red, the yellow, and the green foods. What are your trigger foods that cause your cravings? Because food addiction is a twofold disease. It's physical cravings of the body, and then we go into the mental obsession. And most addicts don't realize, everyone coming in, sometimes it's diet with group support at the beginning of OA. However, once they discover that the second part is the mental obsession, for me, I never knew that until like recently. I used to focus on the food allergy.
Yeah, and I want to bring Margaret into this conversation because as a yoga therapist, you know, Linda just talked about this mental obsession. And there's things that you do in terms of working with the breath or bringing them, bringing ourselves to our body. I wonder if you could just kind of make a comment about that, how to address that mental obsession, Margaret.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are ways to be aware of the breath. When we breathe in, we can count. When we breathe out, we can count a little bit longer and lengthen the exhalation, which has a real soothing, calming effect on the nervous system. Moving the body in particular ways, just feeling grounded in the body, noticing where we are connected to other supportive surfaces.
Yeah. So just by coming to the breath, this will give us a chance to pause, right, Linda?
Absolutely. The other thing is that when we come into recovery, we learn different strategies and methodology, as Margaret just shared. Breathing is very important. The pause is very important. And there's another thing, wait, W-A-I-T. Why am I talking? So a lot of times when we give up the food, we get what's called the RID, R-I-D. We get restless, irritable, and discontent. So that's why many people slip with food, because they can't cope with those feelings of the discontent and the agitation. So yoga, Tai Chi, any discipline, deep breathing, meditation, whatever calms the nervous system helps the person that is in recovery keep it going, because there's a very low percent of recovery with food addiction. I'm sure in others as well.
Oh, yeah.
However, in food addiction, it's very low.
So let's give an example. They're watching television, and the person happens to be a football fan, and they're watching their Packers or their Cowboys or whatever. And, of course, there are going to be food commercials on television, and they see that juicy hamburger from some fast food place, which is really, that's a slippery slope. They see that, and, of course, they make it look really attractive in the ads. What are their options right there as all of a sudden they start obsessing about something that's not a good choice?
Well, at the beginning of recovery, there might be some strategies really not to watch commercials if that's going to be your thing and it's going to trigger something within you. However, it's very important, this unconsciousness, because a lot of people are triggered by watching TV, reading a book, or being on their phone. I mean, the phone is a really big, another addiction.
Oh,
you know?
There
are treatment centers now for technology addiction. So it's going unconscious, using something other than staying in the present moment to divert. So then you get that feeling of feeling like that empty feeling. And then again, what do you want to fill it with? So food addicts go and eat.
Mm-hmm.
So abstinence is abstaining from these trigger foods and behaviors as well. So the memory, as I shared before, it's not just food. There's a whole combination of different behaviors that can trigger the food addiction.
Yeah.
It's very complex.
That ritualized, compulsive comfort seeking again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I sometimes have found myself eating compulsively, and it seems like boredom for me. I get bored sometimes, and I just want to eat something. Is that pretty common?
You don't need an excuse. When you are, I call it like a civilian, and you get hungry and you want to eat something, it's not a problem. When you have a food addiction, we don't need an excuse to eat. And then what happens is after we have a drunkalogue. So there's always a reason why we picked up. And then when you share it with someone else, I ate because I was angry. I ate because I was upset. I ate because I was happy. It doesn't matter. When you have a food addiction, you always have an excuse why you pick up.
And then there's the shame.
Yes.
And then there's that, well, you know what? I've already eaten two pieces of chocolate cake, and now I feel so crappy, I might as well eat the whole thing.
Well, that's the mental obsession that kicks
in. And it just...
That's the second part. It's the mind takes over, and then I'll start on Monday, whatever you want to tell yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there are questions when you work with people that you ask them, you ask them questions like, you explore their food behaviors, for example. So what would be like a danger sign that is very obvious, or maybe some of the typical sort of food behaviors that you notice among people with food addiction?
One of the biggest things is isolation.
Oh,
a food addict will isolate. Most food addicts do their binging alone in their cars. So I would ask them, like, what are your patterns of binging? Like, where would you binge or restrict? You know, it's also anorexic and bulimia, you know, purging. There are exercise bulimics that also every minute they're doing exercise just to not feel responsibility for what they're eating, or they purge, you know, by throwing up or any way to get rid of it. The major the reason people do any kind of addiction is to feel like a bad person, to feel like a piece of garbage. That's the key reason why we have addiction. It's to feel badly about yourself. It doesn't matter what you're engaging in.
Right. That's the end result.
Yes.
So there's a myth that people who have eating disorders are all overweight. Not true, is it?
No, there are many anorexics and bulimics that have near-death experiences because they starve themselves to death. However, it's the same disease.
Same disease. And you asked them about issues with emotions related to overeating. You talk about that, like what kind of emotions relate to overeating?
Well, when we do an intake, we ask a series of questions about the family of origin, their behavior patterns, the emotions that they experience, if they are depressed chemically. Some people need medication, you know, to address chemical depression.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are imbalanced nutritionally and they need supplementation. There's a whole series of an intake we take, mm-hmm. you know, we ask the client before we put them on any type of, you know, regimen, and they go into the recovery process.
And I imagine one of the issues that comes up is, who do they socialize with? Do you ever talk to people and maybe suggest that they find a different circle of friends?
Well, what happens in the process, people that start getting healthy, most addictive personalities gravitate to toxic relationships. So when you come into recovery in any type of venue, either working a 12-step program or going into a treatment center, it's highly recommended to stay out of relationships, unless you're in one, to really, for at least a year, don't get into any type of relationship, because you'll be acting out and it will be very difficult. It might trigger feelings, as I said, the restlessness, irritability, and discontent in your life. It would be more tendency to slip.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the emotions come up. The reason people eat is because of the escalation of the emotions. Mm-hmm. They're eating to douse the feelings mm-hmm. and to push them down mm-hmm. internally.
Yeah. And then some people, you talk to them about exercising.
Balance.
Yeah. And are they using exercise in a healthy way or as another form of avoidance?
Well, again, once the person starts the process of recovery, physical exercise regimen is recommended because it does help alleviate a lot of feelings, but nothing in excess. We strive for the balance. There's something in program called the three-legged stool. You know, you look at the three legs. It's emotional, physical, spiritual. So when one is off kilter, you work on that one. So say, for example, physical. So when a person is on a good, sound food plan, it's recommended to integrate in balance, to keep that stool balanced, some kind of an exercise that they want to do for themselves that they would enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's key.
Yes. And yoga is another form of exercise. You know, you're still stretching, you're moving your body, and it's physical exercise.
And some people can get addicted to over-exercising. Oh. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's exercise bulimia. It's, again, the same outcome. To get rid of something, to not take responsibility for it.
It's that same pattern of looking for something outside yourself.
Correct.
Rather than inside ourselves, which brings us to the spiritual.
Absolutely.
And you had a spiritual awakening in your 20s, which really brought you to the realization that you had a problem and directed you to the rooms of recovery, the 12-step rooms.
Yes. So in step one, I admitted my powerlessness over food, the unmanageability of my life, through that process of hitting a bottom and becoming aware, and then I went into my acceptance mode. Step two is coming to believe in something greater than myself. Step three was making the decision to turn my life over on a daily basis. That was the most difficult one. There's something in step three, it's called the acronym for trust, thoroughly relying and understanding step three. So because of my family of origin background, I had a lot of trouble trusting the process and turning my life over. So it took me a lot of time and many years to cultivate. I never knew. I used, you know, this is not a religious program. This is a spiritual enlightenment growth program. So for me, it took me a long time to enlarge my spirituality. So now for me, I have a higher powered source that when I get into any kind of distress, any way, physically, emotionally, or spiritually, I can turn my life over to that personal, tangible, higher power. And I just want to say one other thing.
Yeah.
Recently, it's not only a spiritual higher power, it's resource higher powers, like higher powered authorities, like people that I would go to in my, I call it my God squad. These are higher powered sources. They know more than me. I trust them. So that's another form. And you, whoever comes into recovery, it's not religion. It's developing trust in something greater than our ego.
Yeah. And talk about community. You mentioned before that a lot of people, when they're in their addiction, they isolate.
True.
And I know from my experience, and I know Margaret as well, what we've seen is that when we start building community, that's such a key, isn't it?
Yes. Well, fellowship.
Fellowship.
And again, when I sponsor someone, I say to them, you need to start branching out. It's also a form of step 12, doing service, calling people, establishing your support system. You can't do this alone. No addiction can be mastered alone.
Yeah.
Unless you live on a mountaintop.
And the other thing about service, not only does it connect with you, with other people, but it gets us out of thinking about ourselves, doesn't it?
The key also in recovery is to relate and identify. So when we go to a meeting or we speak to a fellow that has a food addiction and we hear what they have to say, we relate and identify and we feel part of it. Part of my childhood was I never felt like I fit. Hmm. I always felt like an oddball, and I never felt like I was part of anything.
I've heard that from almost everybody I know that has been in addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt like I fit in.
Yes, and that's why fellowship is so important.
Yeah.
And whatever addiction it is, food addiction, drug addiction, as long as we find our support system and network where we know when we're in trouble or when we're happy, we can share our joys and we can share our issues. It's very important.
And we're building a new community among people who understand us and aren't going to judge us, aren't going to shame us, and people who are walking the path that we can learn from.
That's right. They say in program, Yale or jail, Park Avenue, Park Bench. We're all sitting in the meetings, and we're all from all walks of life, and we have what's called anonymity. We don't really know most of the time, unless you have intimate relationships with people, and, you know, as far as speaking to them about the recovery, we don't know who they are. It's keeping their anonymity.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in here and just mention a couple of things, but also remind our listeners, this is A Mindful Emergence on WPVM FM 103.7. Linda Reese is joining us in the studio this week talking about the three A's of recovery from eating disorder. There's an event coming up on Thursday, October 12th, that our listeners might want to know about, that's being presented by National Alliance on Mental Illness in Western North Carolina. And it's going to be over at the NAMI office at 356 Biltmore Avenue, Thursday at 6 o'clock. And the topic is Survive to Thrive, One Person's Story of Lived Experience with Bipolar. A speaker is going to be Chuck Fink. So you can get more information at NAMI, WNC.org, if you want to find out about that. And then I also want to mention a couple of other programs on WPVM that you might particularly want to check out of all the shows, if you like this program, because it has a similar kind of approach. The first one is Wild Heart with Laura Elliott on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. This is a talk show with guests from various walks of life who share their passions, stories, and ways of life that inspire the freedom of heart. And then Thursdays from 5 to 6, McNair Ezard hosts A Better World, where he brings in people and organizations that are working in areas like hunger and poverty, economic social justice, the environment, and spirituality. So all along the same kind of theme as what Linda, our guest, is doing, is just really trying to help people find themselves, help people find solutions to really find a new way to live, isn't it? It's a new way to live. Yes. And you see miracles all the time, don't you?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I also want to talk a little bit about the spiral effect. When working a program of recovery, being an attraction, not a promotion. And I just want to share, as I shared before, that this is definitely an inherited disease. And I have three children. So my first husband was a food addict because, of course, I attracted a morbidly obese man because we were both morbidly obese. And we were married for 10 years. We had children. And two of those children have eating disorders and other addiction. I married for the second time to a normie who doesn't have any addictions.
He can actually sit down and eat a piece of cake and not eat the whole thing.
Absolutely. Very balanced, even man, totally opposite of me. And we have a daughter, and she does not have the food addiction. So in my life, it is proven that this is definitely an inherited disease. Uh-huh. Now, two of my children from the first marriage are both in recovery for food addiction.
Good for them.
Yes, so, and for gambling addiction as well. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful that it was able to spiral in the community and into my own personal life.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a couple of personality types and wondering how much you see this in people who deal with these eating disorders. People pleasers. Talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, food addicts are people that they'll be your best friend. They'll do anything for you. They people please because, again, that's another defense mechanism. You want everybody to love you. You know, you don't want anybody to know who you really are. It's part of that double personality. So you're happy and laughing on the outside. You're social. You want everybody to love you. But inside, you're really hurting. And then what happens as you recover, you start to develop healthier relationships and healthier behaviors. You find the truth about your personality and who you really are. Mm-hmm. Start making good choices. You know, you can't be friendly with everybody and you can't be loved by everybody either. That's another thing, being rejected a lot. You know, people reject you. Mm-hmm. So it's all part of the personality layers that get peeled off as you work the steps.
Learning how to be honest with yourself, honest with others. What about setting boundaries? Do they have trouble with that?
Again, it's the same thing, the doormat. People mm-hmm. step yeah. on you, but I just want to talk about the steps a little bit more.
Sure.
So after the third step, when we turn our lives over to a higher source, personal to each person, we get into what's called the inventory step, and we take stock. We do resentments, we do fears, and we do sexual behaviors, not the act of sex, but the intimacy with relationships. We explore that. Then in the fifth step, we share it with another human being. And as we progress, you're talking about all these personality liabilities that get it through the process. There are solutions because we come in with the problem through the step work and the enlightenment of the structure. Those problems really dissipate and we become emerged into, we call it plummeting into the fourth dimension because we have a change of the way we look at life. It's like I call it turning myself inside out.
Hmm.
However, that action, the third A, there's a lot of work.
There is work.
A lot of work in the program. If you really want it, though, you have to be willing, like you said before.
Yeah. And then we reach this point of the program where people need to make amends.
Absolutely. That's 8 and 9.
Yeah.
8, you make your list of the people. And then in 9, you make a direct amends, except where to do so would injure the person. And you're led through this with a hired spiritual guide, mm-hmm. your sponsor, whatever you want to call it. So you're not doing this alone. But as you're doing it, you are getting to be, we call it recovered, not cured. Once we go through those steps, we are mm-hmm. recovered with our food, but we're never cured.
Yeah. So do you still, after all these years of recovery, become mentally obsessed with
Absolutely.
Food?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It never goes away.
Not cured.
Never cured. And when I go there, though, I have my steps.
You have your tools.
And I have my tools.
You have
my
probably
people.
Phone numbers.
I have my people. Absolutely.
People you call.
Absolutely. I couldn't do this without them.
Yeah.
And my higher power.
Yeah. When we finish our meetings, sometimes people will say, we circle up. And we hug each other, and we say, hold on to the person next to you like your life depends on it, because it does, doesn't it?
Yes, and we go, keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I have a question about craving. With food addiction, is it the same as any other addiction with drugs, alcohol, behaviors? Does the craving act like a wave? Rises, subsides, kind of gets a little less as you work with it.
As you recover, you do get what's called neutrality around the food. So, for example, I can handle food now and I have no cravings at all. The only time you get the craving is when you eat it. So it's a physical allergy. You can look at it and maybe want it, but because of recovery, we don't eat it, and it's like looking at it with like a neutral state.
Okay.
So I can handle food now that I could never handle before.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, I can look at a glass of Guinness, and it doesn't bother me. You know, I don't have any craving anymore. I have a neutrality around it.
Yes.
Which is, you know, is a good thing. It's something I need to do.
The other, as I shared before, with any addiction and with food especially, it's the RID, the restlessness, irritability, and discontent.
Yeah.
So when I find myself there and it happens...
have to pay attention, don't we, Linda?
Yes.
We have to be constantly monitoring, how am I feeling, what am I thinking, what's going on?
That's right. And the higher power taps me on the shoulder, says, get up. Make a phone call.
Go for a walk.
Pause.
Yeah.
Walk away. Whatever I have to do.
Go to a meeting.
For me. Go to a meeting.
Go to a meeting, yeah.
Whatever works.
So there are a couple of things I want to make sure that we cover in the time that we have remaining. One is a website that people can get information at. If you could please let them know how they can find out more about you, Linda.
Yes. Well, you can go on what's called MaddieMorphis.com. Which is my website. It's MaddieMorphis.com. And on that website, you can see, you know, where you can find more information about me and the book that I wrote.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. Tell us about this book, and which I presume people can get information about at that same website,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
This book was written because, as I shared before, I was an educator for many years, and I noticed a lot of younger children. There are books around for the older students. However, for the kindergarten through the fifth graders, it's a book that just creates awareness of stranger danger and just saying no to, you know, drug use. And eventually there was supposed to be a sequel for the food. However, right now I just wrote that book. And it's really awareness for younger children and for parents, and therapists use it as well in their treatment.
And the name of the book is?
The Adventures of Maddie Morphis, which is metamorphosis.
Oh.
And Maddie is a caterpillar. And she's so beautiful.
I'll bet.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's one resource. And I have some other resources that I think would be very helpful.
On the website?
Yeah. Well, no, not on the website.
Oh, please give us those.
Sure. There's a daily phone meeting for people that have food addiction, and it's called A Vision for You. And you can listen to this meeting live from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or you can listen to the backup line anytime during the day. So I'm going to give you the two phone numbers. And just my suggestion is just have an open mind. If you are exploring whether or not you have this, just listen and see, you know, and then you can make your own choice. So the number is 712-432-5210. And then you'll get the prompt and you put in 876-148, the pound sign. That's live. Now, if you want to listen anytime during the day, the backup line is 712-432-5203. the same 876-148-POUND, and 0 pound will put you into the morning meeting.
Yeah. And just reminding our listeners, this program is archived. So if you're listening live and you need to get this information, it'll be up on the website, WPBM-FM, by tomorrow. So you'll be able to go and get this information. So in just a couple of minutes or so we have remaining, what are some myths that people have about recovery from eating disorder that maybe we can dispel?
Well, one of the things that just came into my mind is that you can diet away misery, okay? Because this is such, food addiction is running rampant, as I said, all over the world, especially in America. And it's not being on a diet. It's really a lifestyle shift, and it's also a substance, just like any other drug. Food is really a drug. And what I want to leave the person with, if anybody is looking maybe for some solutions, is to just have an open mind, maybe listen to a meeting, maybe catch a local OA meeting, and just explore the possibility that you might have this.
Yeah. In Overeaters Anonymous, there's a website that if they just Google Overeaters Anonymous, they can go online and find a list of meetings that they can go to. And
yes,
anybody can just walk into a meeting and go, let me see if this is something that fits for me.
Absolutely. It's OA.org, and you can find any meeting in any state of the country. And over, you know, this meeting that I listened to, it's worldwide.
Okay.
People from all countries tune into this, a vision for you.
Yeah. So it's wonderful that this resource is out there and available, because this is obviously a huge issue. And Linda, you're doing such good work, both up here in Western North Carolina and down in the Florida area. And you're around Fort Lauderdale, I understand?
Yes, I'm right near Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, again, give them the website where people can find you.
It's MaddieMorphis.com, MaddieMorphis.com.
Great. Okay, any last minute, any last thought you want to mention in 20 seconds or so?
I just want to thank you for allowing me to do service today. This is demonstrating step 12 in my program.
Yes.
And if anybody gets anything out of it, I'll be so grateful and humbled.
Oh.
And thank you so much, really, for asking me.
Well, we're so appreciative of you coming in. Linda Reese on WPBM this week. And next week, make sure you join us for Project CARA, C-A-R-A, Supporting Moms Expecting Recovery in Pregnancy. And we've got guests from MAHEC coming in. So that is going to be another show here on A Mindful Emergence. So once again, thanking our guest, Linda Reese, on A Mindful Emergence, and thanking you for tuning in. See you next week.